Good evening, everyone. We'll start in another minute. Okay, wait another few seconds and we'll start. Okay, good evening everyone on Zoom, on Facebook. Hope everyone's having an okay day, maybe more than okay, surviving through this all. So we thought we would discuss an interesting topic tonight, which really covers a whole range of topics. It's not really one topic, it's sort of a whole range of topics mixed together. Perhaps they're connected, perhaps they're not. We'll see. But the bottom line of it all is to analyze the difference between the previous generation and our generation. Now, when I say the previous generation, you know, that can mean a lot of things. You know, my father was the previous generation relative to me. But I think what I'm really talking about is like 80, 90 years ago. I think like sort of the my grandparents' generation versus our generation. I think it's fair to say that there was a huge sort of jump and difference between, let's say, from 70 years ago, sort of something switched. Whereas 200 years ago versus 100 years ago might have not been as different, but I think something fundamentally changed within society. Our values have changed, our way of educating has changed. And the question which you want to analyze tonight is, has that change been for the good or for the bad? And are the things that we can learn from the previous generations, are the things that the previous generations could learn from us? And obviously, we'll do that through a Jewish lens, a Torah lens, and try to analyze all of these things. So it should make for an interesting discussion. As we always say, if anyone has a question or a comment, please put it in the chat box. And participate in the conversation. So let's start off from one of the things which has changed, and that is the way we educate children. Previous generation, child misbehaved, you slapped them across the face, you gave them a patch, as they used to call it, and that was the end of it. Right, nowadays, we've sort of moved away from that, it seems like. And I remember I remember seeing an article or some sort of parenting thing from some expert parenting person, can't remember the name, can't remember where I saw this, something to the effect of, you can never say no to your child without explaining why. You always have to explain why, you know, this idea of because I said so shouldn't exist. So we've sort of moved quite dramatically away from slapping your children up when they misbehave to, hardly ever saying no, never saying no without explaining why. All these new sort of modern day parenting techniques, how to talk to children so they can listen and all of these things. So as someone who's a parenting expert who advises people on parenting, what do you think of that? Do you think we should bring back slapping kids or do you think we have it more right today? Do you think we're educating children? Do you think our children are turning out better than they did 100 years ago?
So good evening, everyone. Great to be at another schmooze. I'm really interested that you started with this topic specifically, because I'm sure you've got lots of other topics to cover. Hope you're not going to reveal any secrets or trauma from your own childhood, because this wouldn't be the right forum to do it, I hope. Just kidding. Okay, so before we address this particular issue, I think I want to Start with a general concept. You know, there's a, on the one hand, there's a, I want to lay the foundation with two ideas. One is that there's a verse in Tehillim which says, "Dor ledor yishabach ma'asecha," which literally means generation to generation will praise your works. This is what King David writes about in Psalms in Tehillim. But there's an older Hasidic interpretation to this verse, which I actually heard the first time from an older Hasid in Melbourne called Rabbi Zalman Serebransky. And he said, "Dor ledor, from generation to generation, yishabach ma'asecha." Yishabach comes from the word improved. Your actions will become improved. Your works will become improved. In other words, each generation brings something new, something better in a way, to the previous generation, which is true. On the other hand, very unfortunate are those generations that don't learn from the experience and from the wisdom of the previous generations. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit later. That's one concept. So I think as a general rule in all the topics you're going to bring up, greater research, greater understanding, greater progress in understanding people often brings that later generations do understand certain things that perhaps generations previously didn't understand, or didn't notice, or didn't deal with properly, whatever the case is. On the other hand, part of the danger is that we're a chain, and we have so much to learn from the previous generations, and we should never go away from that, right? That's the first concept. The second concept is a concept I've talked about many times, and some of you would have heard it from me already. That's what I call the pendulum syndrome. The pendulum syndrome is that, and I'll explain where that comes from, right? The pendulum syndrome means just like a pendulum that swings to one side, and because it swings to one side, then swings to the other extreme, and so on and so forth. And human beings often, in all generations, suffer from the pendulum syndrome. They do something, often in an extreme. They do something which is perhaps intrinsically good, but they do it to an extreme, which means it has negative consequences. The next generation notices the negative consequences that are brought about. So what do? They flip it and they go to the other extreme, and the other extreme has equally devastating consequences, and so it goes back and forth and never gets it right. Why do I say that? Because one of the fundamentals of personal growth from a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, is working on ourselves not to be locked into one extreme or the other, right? In other words, I speak about this a lot, the concept of chesed and gevurah, whether it's giving or holding back, love, respect, all those types of things, all those different things. And in life, we need both. And we're all created with a particular personality or every society is created with a particular culture or designs its own culture, whatever the case might be. And an extreme is never good, because to be an ethical person, to be a person who lives with values and principles, to be a godly person, to be a spiritual person, requires a balance, requires what we call in Hebrew tiferet, which means synthesis, harmony, beauty, the ability to balance, number one, and to sometimes combine the good from either extreme, right? I don't know if that's clear, but hope so. So in that context, with that introduction, that's true. I think it's going to be true with lots of things we're going to talk about tonight. So let's talk about your particular example.
Let me just interrupt you for a second.
Please do.
Before you go on to the specifics, something interesting you just said there. So you said about extremes. Let me just pose this from a Jewish point of view, right? Our Torah was given, 3,333 years ago, right?
3,333,
right. That means our values are very old. Yeah. So wouldn't one, and this is an interesting question, do you, and I guess you'll get into the specifics as we go on, but do you think that as someone who's looking through the lens of our tradition, wouldn't you automatically say that whatever the values were, 400, 500 years ago, whatever it was, 3,000 years ago, are more true to our values automatically? In other words, what could be invented now that the Torah didn't have 3,330 years ago? Doesn't that automatically make it wrong from a Jewish point of view? Isn't change, what I'm asking, I guess, isn't change by definition wrong in our sort of...
So that's a fantastic question. I think the answer to that is the following. The Torah's values are eternal, and they're they're not only 3,333 years old, we have a principle that the Torah actually preceded the world. In other words, it transcends the world. So it's something which is timeless and eternal. But because it's timeless and eternal, we know that, because it's timeless and eternal, the Torah values in itself are perfect. Absolutely perfect. It's absolute truths. However, what isn't perfect and what does change and what does evolve is society. Now, we live, this is the concept actually we're talking about. This is exactly the point. We live by Torah's values. But Torah's values need to be applied to each society, each culture, each time. We need to respond. So anytime things happen, societies change, cultures change, people change, things change, all sorts of things change and evolve and are discovered and progress and so on and so forth. And every generation, we have to ask ourselves the question, what's Torah's response to this particular setting? Because the Torah is, so we never discard Torah's values, but because we never discard Torah's values, that's exactly why we need to not rejig, God forbid, but to understand what does Torah want me to do in this situation, right? Now, I say that because, again, Torah's values intrinsically are absolutely true. That doesn't mean that people always keep them perfectly. And therefore, sometimes we find that when there's a particular culture that is prevalent in a society, people apply an endeavor to keep Torah's values, but then we'll do it in a way which is extreme and unbalanced and not applied properly, right? Because part of Torah's values, which Torah represents the concept of truth, is to find that balance, right? And in fact, let's use this to go into this particular question because it's exactly the point, right? Hitting children versus saying no without a reason, right? So in ancient times or previous generation, as you call it, you know, children were meant to be seen. How does it go? Unseen, not heard or something. You never questioned. You do as I'm told and so on and so forth. That concept, and they were hit. If they ever did the wrong thing, they were hit. Now, all of that, including hitting, by the way, I'm not recommending hitting, but including hitting, right? All is legitimate. If you were to ask me, is it a Torah legitimate value? Yes, it is. But there's a but. Meaning like this. Torah believes in discipline. Torah believes in hierarchical relationships. What I mean is that there's authority and that there's people that need to follow authority. Torah believes in surrender. Torah believes in respecting your elders. Torah believes in all these things, right? So yes, were people supposed to absolutely listen to their parents and never contradict them and do whatever they tell you to do, that's definitely a Torah value, right? To the point where we know that there's a pasuk, there's a famous verse, spare the rod and spoil the child, right? It's a universal, famous verse. Chosech shifto soneh beno. Someone who withholds the rod hates his child because he spoils his child. It's a Torah principle. However, it's the application of those principles that needs to be understood. So therefore, there came a time where society realizes that it wasn't always effective. It wasn't always effective because it wasn't always applied properly, right? Now, I don't think actually that any child will die if once in a while a child chaps a little patch. I got a patch as a child and I don't feel traumatized by it. Not very often because I was a bit scared as a child. So I try to do the right thing, but, you know, out of fear more than anything else. But okay, so what? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think. However, there was a lot of hitting that went on in those days, and there was a lot of harshness, a discipline that came along, not because parents or teachers wanted to do the right thing, because that was their nature. It became a society thing where people were harsh and they traumatized children. And there was a lot of damage done. That's the truth. Damage wasn't done because they were living, what they applied was inconsistent with Torah values. It was done because it was applied incorrectly, because that was part of, it wasn't Torah's fault, it was society's fault. It was the culture of society. There were those that did it very, very well. I'll tell you just a little story. When I was growing up in high school, I had a teacher, a Rosh Hashiva, his name was Rabbi Pollack, the most amazing educator. I'm serious, the most amazing, amazing educator. Now, he threatened every so often to hit, and he never actually carried it out, except for a few times, right? Because in those days, it was okay, you could hit. Like once in a while, the Rosh Hashiva could give a patch. It wasn't an issue. No one would have bat an eyelid. It was acceptable. Now, I remember a teacher in that school that used to, probably in his class, used to give like 7 hidings a day to different students, right? Probably not many people remember him, and he was a pretty ineffective teacher. On the other hand, Rabbi Pollack, right? Everyone who learned Barabbas Palach remembers him, just amazingly, right? I sent him an invitation for your bar mitzvah or maybe passed away, but then really, or Moshe's bar mitzvah, and he called me to say mazel tov. That's how the relationships between him and his students were so strong. And I remember once, I'll never forget that moment, right? When at an assembly, a student was extremely disrespectful to him, and he walked over to him and he gave him a good whack. And that student deserved it. And I also remember, listen to this, that he was so broken that he had to do that. And that for weeks afterwards, I could see him walking with that student, talking to him, discussing, right? In other words, he really fulfilled that verse of, you know, not sparing the rod, but he did it because it was the right, only when it was the right thing for the child. He never did it out of anger. He never did it indiscriminately. He never did it because he could, because he got irritated. He did it when he felt it was the right thing to do. And he was a very strict, and Rabbi Palach, if you came 2 minutes late, you got, you know, you had to write out a whole bunch of things, I remember. But no one ever bothered, because he was such a lover. He had that love and sternness together, right? Now, but in a large way, a lot of people suffered from teachers who were impatient, perhaps didn't belong in the classroom, or parents that were impatient. You know, not all parents qualified to have children, but there was, every parent has children, right? But nevertheless, so it became this thing, no, we have to understand children better, we have to love them better, we have to accept them better, unconditional love, which are also Torah values. But the problem is we take one value without the other, and you go to the extreme, that's the pendulum syndrome. So we landed up now with the generation that you can never punish a child, you can never discipline a child, and you can never even say no to a child, unless you fully explain it. You have to give them a thesis to prove your point to a two-year-old, to a four-year-old, of why you want them to listen to you, which is completely contrary to Torah values. Now, what happened to the verse of spare the rod and spoil the child? So many tzaddikim, many great scholars tell us that there's various applications of pasuk, and that verse still applies, not necessarily with a physical spanking. Because even without going to the extreme, truth is every generation is different. Now, we are weaker people today. Perhaps today's kids do need a bit more love than their previous generations, and that's okay. But does the verse still apply? Absolutely. It doesn't mean it has to be a physical spanking, but it could be a sternness, it could be a rebuke, it can be a strict boundary, it can be sometimes a consequence, which is appropriate and normal, right? One of the principles of Judaism, one of the strong principles of Judaism, is instilling within human beings, and therefore particularly with children, the concept of being able to listen without understanding, right? You know that phrase in Yiddish, because I told it to you very often when you were a child. Folgen onar farvos, to listen without asking why. And I think that still should be there as part of parenting. Absolutely. Not with anger, not with harshness, and not every time. It's okay to explain to children why you need to do something, but not every time. Children need to learn that you do things without asking them, without asking why, and that's fine. But not with sarcasm, not with harshness, not, you know. So it's that balance, right? So the extreme harshness was terrible. The extreme love is terrible. It's got to be the love and discipline coming together. I don't know if that answers the question, but I think that's my spiel.
Yeah, no, that's great. On a more broader sense, on this topic of young sort of children, and maybe, I think this is more not so much about children, more about sort of younger people. I think in olden times, there was a sense that when a younger person wanted wisdom, wanted guidance, they went to older people. That was like, in other words, they looked towards the older generation. They're wiser. They're smarter than me. They've been through life. You know, they have something to teach me, etc. I think that we've moved away from that. And I think society today, if anything, it's the contrary. It's like people say, let's listen to the young people. Like they have fresh ideas. They have new perspectives. They know the truth. What do you think about that? Is there any truth to that? Should old people be learning from young people? That seems to be where society is today. We're sort of like you go and visit older people once in a while, but that's not where you get your wisdom from. Your wisdom is sort of the younger people know better. Is there a big problem with that?
So let me, that's an interesting question. Two things, as you're asking the question, two things came to mind. One is a piece of the Talmud. The Talmud says a very interesting thing. It says, Binyan Na'arim Stira, Stirat Zkenim Binyan, which means sometimes that which young people build actually demolishes, that which sometimes old people demolish is actually building. So there's no question that it's one of the great failings of our society, that the lack and the lack of willingness to learn from the experience of those who are older. That we, the Talmud also tells us, Ein chacham kebal ha-nisayon, there's no greater wise person than an experienced person. The word zaken, the word old in Hebrew, which means an older person, also comes from the word zesha kanach chachma, someone who's acquired wisdom. And there's no greater wisdom than those who have acquired wisdom over time, seeing the things that they've done, experiencing so many different parts of life, and so on and so forth. So one of the great failings of today's generation is the lack of willingness and the thinking that we know better, and right, and not going to those that are older than us and listening to them and drinking in the words of their wisdom and the words of their experience. At the same time, I'm reminded of an interesting institution that the Lubavitcher Rebbe started shortly after he became the Rebbe of Chabad. And he called it Tzach. Tzach stands for Tziurei Agudei Chabad, which is the young ones of the Chabad. Because the Rebbe held that, again, it goes back to that concept of balance. Direction and guidance need to come from older people. But older people need to listen to the freshness of the youth. There's an energy, there's a freshness, there's a creativity that resides in youth, which older people don't have. And the challenge that older people have is they need to tap into and listen to that freshness and that fresh ideas. So if the core values and the foundations are learned and taught by those who are older, and those who are older tap into and listen, absorb to the freshness and the creativity of the youth, that's a wonderful combination. And I think that's what the Rebbe was trying to do. And he said that when he established that institution, it was the concept of bringing in the strength and the power and the vigor and the creativity of those who are young. So, yes, so I think it's a big mistake. It's a terrible mistake in our generation. We've discarded that experience of the old, but at the same time, maybe in previous generations, some older people were not willing to tap into the creativity and the energy of the youth, which is also a problem. And therefore, again, it's the combination which is so beautiful.
I just heard an analogy from someone in relation to a totally different, more from the political sort of context, but I think it's a good analogy for this, that there's two different types of people. Some people, when they walk, and they're walking in a field and suddenly they see a wall and they have no idea why the wall is there. So there's two different types of reactions. One reaction is just knock down the wall. What's it doing here? There's no purpose for it. And then suddenly when you knock down the wall, you realize on the other side, there's danger, right? You just didn't realize. Or another type of reaction would be, let's first of all figure out why the wall is here. And so the analogy was given, like when things have been around for generations and the sort of older wisdom, sort of the one way to deal with that is, well, I don't understand what it is, therefore let's just discard it and forget about it. Let's just start a new way. Not realizing that there was a reason why this has been here for so long. There's a reason why people have been doing it this way for such a long time. But I think together with that, you can always improve the wall. So like in other words, even if the wall needs to be there, I guess you can use that analogy as well. And then also the wall could be a little bit different and sort of renewed, etc.
I think that's a great analogy. And I think, you know, in Yiddishkeit, we know we have this concept called Mesoira, which is tradition. The things that our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents have established as part of Jewish experience becomes sacred. And you're right. And I think the other thing is, it was right. I think it's about not discarding the wall, but what you could do is you can improve on the wall. And that's what the youth bring to that. They do bring an improvement to make it a better wall, but not to discard and replace it with something else.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
And so the other thing that came to mind when you were saying that is there's another part of the Talmud which says that before Mashiach, that's sort of one of the signs of Mashiach coming. Is the youth being disrespectful to the elders. So it's actually a negative thing. In other words, sort of it's a sign that like, the world's getting so bad that you really need redemption. But it does say in some sources that can be used for the positive as well. So although it is a negative thing in essence, but if it's used in the context of the youth trying to inspire their parents to, for example, come closer to Judaism or get more involved, it could be like, in other words, everything can be channeled and sort of used for the positive as well.
Correct.
Okay, going on to another sort of difference that we see nowadays. in the area of mental health, I think this is a sensitive subject, and I think all the more so now. I mean, mental health is a very, very serious thing. Now, it doesn't seem like people of the older generation either knew about mental health or cared about it or dealt with it. I don't even know if it was like such a, you know, if it was a common thing to go see a therapist, to go see a psychologist. It probably was like more the exception than the norm, whereas probably nowadays it's more the norm than the exception. It's almost like, you know, it's very normal to go and talk to someone and to go sort of deal with your issues and things like that. Is there any benefit? And I think because of that, I mean, you know, there were a lot of issues that were ignored. If you look at the older generation and that sort of could have filtered down into families and the future generations as well, mental health issues and psychological issues that were never dealt with properly, whereas nowadays perhaps they would have been dealt with properly. Is there any advantage to the way, I mean, I see the obvious benefit is the way it's done nowadays. I think that's obvious. I mean, that's understood. Is there any benefit at all to the way things were? Because, I mean, and I guess this is another part of the question. Mental health issues is definitely on the rise now. Now, the question is that, and this is just, I'm asking your opinion, is that because there are more mental health issues now, or is that because it's more diagnosed now? Whereas could be 80 years ago, you could have had that issue. You could have been depressed or had anxiety, but didn't have a name for it then.
Okay, that's sure, need to unpack that question a bit. So there's no question that something amazing has happened today in terms of removing the stigma of mental health because of the medical research and the understanding of how the mind works and modern psychology and all of that, right? So let me first of all take it back to your very first introductory question about aren't the Torah values eternal? So like if it was so good now, so how come they never did this till now, right? But that's not really such a big problem because what happens is in every generation, God gives us the ability to discover new things in science, for example, in medicine, in the way the mind works, in the way the heart works, in the way the body works, and so on and so forth, right? And with every new discovery, we then take the Torah principles and we see, well, how does it fit with that discovery? So the fact that it wasn't noticed or it wasn't dealt with properly in previous generation, it doesn't mean they weren't living by Torah values. It just means they didn't understand it. They didn't have the knowledge of it. They didn't have the awareness of it. Because sometimes when you work backwards, once you have a discovery of something, once modern science is able to discover, since we believe everything is ultimately rooted in the Torah's teachings, it's amazing. I mean, you know, I've given a series on mental health and its Torah origins. It's amazing how much you can actually find in early writings of Torah teachings about mental health, but it wasn't picked up on so strongly in previous generation because they didn't understand it so much. Therefore, maybe they didn't understand the impact of what those writings actually meant or were referring to and so on and so forth. So, it's undisputed. I mean, it's clear. That, and it's clear across the you know, across any type of community or brought me in. It's like amazing. When I spoke to a doctor who's unfortunately passed away, but he used to come here to Sydney, used to stay by the Aaron's next door, the Shtibel, if I remember correctly. His name was, I think, Dr. Rothschild, I think his name was, and he was the founder of the hospital in Bnei Brak called Mayana Yeshua, which is a very, very deeply Haredi community. And his last project that I spoke to about, the last project he was doing before he passed away, he was building a psychiatric ward. Which was an amazing jump in that community where often mental health issues were kept under the carpet and were considered taboo and stigmatized and so on and so forth, right? So one of the things that we have understood in our generation, which is amazing, is that a deeper understanding of mental health issues, a deeper understanding of how to deal with mental health issues, an amazing advancement of modern psychology, positive psychology, and everything that's come with it and so on and so forth. So I say that very strongly and very clearly and undoubtedly. At the same time, and also, I mean, we know that today. It should never be the case where someone shouldn't be able to reach out for help. It should never be the case where mental health is stigmatized, so therefore people can't get help and can't share it with friends and so on and so forth. That's a terrible thing, and we know the kind of damage that happened and still happens to some degree because of that, right? Because we're not there yet, by the way. I mean, it's amazing what's happened so far. We're certainly not there yet. But like everything in this world, nothing is perfect, and sometimes extremes do happen, and there's a downside as well. And I think the downside is not to replace what's happening now, but just to be aware of it, right? So you asked the question about is mental health issues more now? I think yes. I mean, the answer is it's more diagnosed now, but it's also more now. And that's got to do with lots of different issues about a lot of emptiness that is there in modern culture and stresses that modern culture has with technology that is contributing to it. There's so much research done on why depression and medication for depression and so on, things, just to give you an example, is skyrocketed over the last couple of decades, right? But I want to just highlight something else, right? Nothing is completely evil, nothing is completely good. So in the previous generation, which wasn't good the way they dealt with mental health issues, but having said that, there was a certain resilience, and what I'm about to say might sound politically incorrect, but I don't mean it in that way at all, because those who know me know that I'm into understanding mental health and I promote dealing with it in a proper way. But there was a certain toughness and a certain resilience that the older generation had, which sometimes we need to learn from. What I mean is the following. First of all, dealing with mental health is really important. And dealing with trauma, for example, is very important. But what is very bad, and this is in the writings, in a more modern way, in the writings of Edith Eger in her two books in a very, very big way, what is very bad is becoming a victim, right? So we do find sometimes, and I have found sometimes when I talk to people, that becomes a very self-absorbing process where you look at someone the wrong way and they're traumatized. It becomes really a mental health issue, right? Not everything is a mental health issue, number one, right? Not because, you know, someone insulted you or someone offended you, you know, now you sort of have scars for life and now you need to go to therapy for the next 17 years. It doesn't always mean that. One has to sort of differentiate between issues that are real and issues that are sort of just fashionable. With some people, and it's a very small segment of people, but with some people I have found that it's almost becoming fashionable to, you know, like if you don't have a therapist, something wrong with you. So I think that's something that modern society is going to have to deal with, because as we destigmatize mental health, another little bit of a component to that as well is the following. Mental health should never be stigmatized and should never be taboo, and everyone should be able to talk about it. It doesn't mean that if someone is suffering from a real mental health issue, that it means they have to broadcast it the entire world. It doesn't mean that they have to talk to everyone. It doesn't mean that it has to go on Facebook. There is a certain value in privacy. There's a certain value in dignity. There's a certain value of dealing with issues with the people that are important and feeling comfortable with sharing it, but it doesn't necessarily have to put out there in the open, because you don't have to create a sort of a scenario where you become the pity of society, so to speak, right? So there's a certain strength and a certain resilience which you do have to learn from the previous generation, which was applied wrongly, but we can apply it correctly just to protect that it doesn't go out of control. Because again, it should become destigmatized, but it shouldn't be like, what's the word I'm looking for? You told me a good line, which I can't remember now, about the difference between being a stigma or I don't remember anymore, but you taught me from your mother-in-law, I think. It was a very good line, but
I remember.
Anyway, it'll come to you, maybe. So again, I think it's an amazing progress of our generation.
I think the gist of it was the difference between stigmatizing something and keeping it private. I think that's...
Yeah. And it shouldn't, you know, it doesn't have to become a badge of honor to, like, you have to have something wrong with you kind of thing in order to fit into today's society.
I mean, would you say that it's better this way? In other words, sort of there's two directions here. Either you tell everyone toughen up, perseverance, and we don't care about mental health issues, or we do care about mental health issues, but because of that, in the sort of minority of cases, it becomes sort of like almost like an in thing, sort of, you know, which way is better?
So I think now it's definitely better, but we still need to highlight this issue so it doesn't become worse. I think it's time also to build into the whole mindset of dealing with mental health issues this concept that we have to be a little bit careful that you know, we shouldn't worry if someone looks the wrong way at our child, for example, or someone happened to say something. We should also teach children resilience and teach people resilience, and not everything has to become a whole issue, not everything has to be a trauma, and not everything has to be broadcasted to the entire world. You should feel comfortable to share it to those people you need to share it with and get the right help and so on and so forth. And we should definitely talk about it as a society discussion. Yes. It should be much more of a discussion. I mean, on a community level, to raise awareness and to raise the issues and to raise the importance of making it a discussion and making it a destigmatized process where people can feel comfortable reaching out and getting the help that they need, but in a healthy way, in a way that will give them strength and not turn them into a victim of trauma for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. So two subjects are sort of connected to this, and we'll do one at a time here. You mentioned the idea of getting offended very easily. Now, I think, and this is, I think, especially come to the forefront in the sort of the past few years. I think our generation is, and I think this is an, it could be a good thing, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, is in a way more sensitive to certain issues. For example, racism and sort of things like that, and how we talk about other people and sort of things like that, on the one hand. On the other hand, there is definitely this idea that, you know, everyone's sort of looking, well, not everyone, but there's definitely a thing, sort of people get offended very, very easily. And in the older generation, people didn't really think twice before they spoke about certain subjects. They just said jokes, they said certain things, which may have been hurtful to certain people and not nice. And nowadays we're more conscious of that. Is that a good thing? Is it a good thing that people are offended easier? Is sort of in an easier way? What do you think about that?
So, I mean, you mentioned racism. I mean, racism obviously is an evil thing. I mean, racism is a bad thing. At the core of it is a terrible thing. No question, racism is evil. In other words, to value one set of people over another and make them more valuable is a terrible thing. We're all creations of God. We're all created in the image of God. And we all have intrinsic godly value, right? But it has, again, the same sort of extreme and pendulum. And the fact that it's been highlighted today is a good thing. But it's sort of gone to a bit of an extreme that has become unhealthy, where people are actually scared to say things that are not politically correct. Case in point, just by the way you asked that question, you can see, right? I imagine some of the things you're referring to, but you won't say it because you're on Zoom and we're on Facebook and you're scared, right? We don't have to close down Bidder next week because of the cancel culture, right? So, you know, when you ask the question, I'm reminded of Jackie Mason. Remember Jackie Mason? You didn't grow up with Jackie Mason, but right? Now, I mean, he said things which were that were sometimes inappropriate. There's no question. But, you know, part of his humor was he didn't take himself seriously and therefore didn't take anyone else seriously. So he's an old Jewish fellow. He made plenty of jokes about Jewish people. Okay, that's always okay. That's always kosher because you can laugh at yourself. But he laughed at other people too. He made jokes about the Puerto Ricans and jokes about the Hispanic. He made jokes about everyone, right? And it was accepted and people had a great time. They laughed. Were some of the comments inappropriate? I'm sure they were. Today, a comedian comes out like that, he wouldn't even make a dime. He'd be out of a job in 5 seconds, right? Because you know, it's such an oversensitivity. You know, part of what Judaism teaches us is that dignity of other human beings is absolutely paramount. But also Judaism teaches us on an individual level not to take ourselves so seriously. So yes, we talked about this last week. Like, you know, we should create boundaries. We should protect ourselves from people saying offensive and hurtful things to us and so on and so forth. But, you know, we have to chill out sometimes, too. We shouldn't take ourselves so seriously. And not every time someone says a little comment which could be interpreted maybe to, that means that now he's canceled for life and he's evil and, you know, a little bit like that. So I think that's the kind of balance that I think you're talking about, and that's a problem. The world's gone mad on political correctness. I mean, seriously mad. And it's a negative thing. It's not a positive thing. Highlighting racism and the evil of racism is a positive thing. Highlighting the importance of being accepting to all people is a positive thing. Although I must say that often we find that the people who talk about acceptance and tolerance are the people that are not very tolerant to those that disagree with them, right? If you're going to be tolerant, you've got to be tolerant. In fact, real tolerance means to actually entertain different views. Just because you agree with people doesn't make you evil, doesn't make you racist, right? We can have plenty of disagreements. We can agree on certain values. We cannot devalue people. That is 100% true. But we can certainly disagree with them. And we can certainly disagree with the way they want to implement certain values, which might be different to the way we want to implement the same values. And therefore, that doesn't make us evil, doesn't make us politically incorrect, racist or canceled, whatever the case is. So that is a real pendulum syndrome example where we have to sort of balance both things. We have to be accepting, tolerant, but we also have to disagree. and that's fine. And we also need to joke with each other, not be traumatized every time someone makes a joke about us.
Yeah. I wasn't planning on asking this, but I think let's just make this a little more controversial for a second. Because this is what I'm about to say is quite a sensitive subject. And he said, I'll steer it to talk. So I think, you know, let's talk about something which is about us. So it's not, you know, not about any other group. So it's a little bit, you know, we can be a little more open. Concept of anti-Semitism, right? So sort of on this subject, right? So anti-Semitism is a very serious thing, obviously. From our experience, the Jewish experience, we know that it's a serious thing. But I think, and I feel, maybe I'm wrong, that it sort of have come to a point where maybe I'm wrong. Are we being oversensitive? Are we saying, you know, every time someone says one little thing, does that mean that they're out to kill the whole Jewish nation? Or maybe we should be sensitive. Maybe we should, you know, learn from history that maybe that many people are out to get us, right? I mean, that is true. There are many people that do hate Jewish people, and that's just a fact of life. So are we as the, because I think that what I'm trying to say is, I guess, over history, Jewish people have always been strong and we've, you know, never gotten scared and we've always gotten back up and just continued. Is this idea of every time someone screams at me from a car, you know, you something Jew, that I have to go now and report this and this is like a crisis that we have to deal with. Is it a crisis? Is it something which we should be scared of? Is it something we should be afraid of? Should we be offended?
Okay, so I think, I mean, just to work backwards, I think someone screams at us a car, I think we should report it because we are aware that real anti-Semitism is on the rise, unfortunately. And therefore it needs to be monitored, needs to be understood, and therefore it needs to be, you know, so it needs to be properly understood. And I think that when you properly understand something, you start with something, the data is very important. But I think you're right. I mean, I think, and also obviously our generation is extremely sensitive and legitimately so, because we, you know, we're still rebuilding from the Holocaust and that's a very serious thing. But I think you're right. I think sometimes we do take it a little bit too far. I think we need to sometimes, not every time someone makes a joke about a Jew. I mean, you know, someone might make a joke somewhere that, I don't know, Jews like food or something like that, which is probably true. And okay, so they said that. It also depends where it comes from, what it's coming from. I mean, unfortunately, today we have politicians, especially in the States, but even here, who say things which are anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and anti-Jewish, which all is all connected. And it's yes, it's real anti-Semitism, and it's on the rise, and we need to be very, very watchful for it. But you're right, just because, you know, someone didn't agree with us on something doesn't make them necessarily a racist or anti-Semite.
Yeah. Okay, going on to a different subject, which I think you touched on a little bit before, you mentioned it, the concept of technology. So our grandparents, even our parents, even ourselves, actually, growing up, didn't have the technology we have today. I think they were happier because of it. I think that's obvious. I think it was definitely, people were calmer. Is there any advantage to the way we live our life that we're able to have WhatsApp and Facebook and Instagram and a whole host of things that I don't even know about, like, you know, some of the next generation already is on. Is there any good to that?
So I think that's a shoe in itself, but the core answer to that is very simple, I think. No, not very simple, but it can be made simple. Not implemented simply, but it can be explained simply. And it goes back to a medrash. The medrash says, you know, everything that's discovered is godly. And therefore everything that's discovered has a purpose, right? As we know. It only depends how it's used. So for example, there's a famous medrash that we know that God created gold, the concept of gold, for the purpose of building a mishkan. So the Mishkan was the house of God, the sanctuary that was in the desert. And it was built in a way where it could be a glorified place for the presence of Hashem. Therefore, it had to be beautiful, and its beauty represented the greatness of God, right? And therefore, it was a lot of gold there, and gold was created for that, right? You know, just on that, just to digress for a moment, I don't know if you remember, I think you were a child then, but many, many years ago, in the Electrical Museum here in the city, there was an exhibition that was traveling the world. It was artifacts from Prague. Remember that?
No.
Maybe too young. But there was the Prague exhibition. What it was essentially is that the Germans, the Nazis, they destroyed Judaism and Jewishness all over Europe. But they wanted to kind of, their intention was to create a museum of what they believe would be, God forbid, the extinct race. And therefore they left a lot of stuff around. and it somehow was in Prague, and it traveled the world for a while and came here. And I went to see it, and it was fascinating, old manuscripts and Torah scrolls. And what was amazing is, from all the different shtetlach, that there was this Jewish culture of that in the shuls, like the hand that were used to use for the Torah or the Torah crowns, they were made out of beautiful things. And these were townlets and shtetlach, which were poor, were poverty-stricken. And it was very clear that even when Jews lived in poverty, but the shul was a place of beauty, right? So I'm just mentioning that as an example. So the Midrash says that gold was created to create the Mishkan, and by extension, houses of God, and so on and so forth. But gold is also the thing that was used for the number one transgression in Jewish history, which was 40 days after the giving of the Torah, when they served the golden calf, right? So something can be created by God, and it's there for a purpose, but we can use it not for its intended purpose, and it can be a devastating blow to our growth and our experience. Technology is exactly the same thing. Technology, the way we know it today, is one of the greatest inventions, which I believe is what we call a godly invention, right? God does not allow human beings only discover things, only invent things, only are able to advance with technology and science and discovery, only if God lets them. So it's one of the greatest inventions of our generation. It's also one of the greatest blows to our generation, right? Because of all the bad that it's done, and all the bad that it comes with, and all the wasting of time, and all the distraction, and all the lack of empathy, and destruction of relationships, and who knows what, that technology, modern technology, is responsible for, right? So are we better off without technology? I don't know. I don't know how we'd run Bina without technology. God forbid if there was a lockdown, everyone would be really isolated, right? Our marketing is based on technology. There's so many things that we use which are technology-based. There's so much learning, Torah learning, that goes on technology today. There's so much accessible. There's so much that's at our fingertips, which is absolutely amazing. So I want to just define what I think is the essential formula. And it actually is applicable to a lot of things, but it's certainly applicable to technology. There are many, many things that God creates or God allows to be discovered, and it can be very good or extremely evil. And the difference will be in the following formula. Are you in control of it, or is it control of you? It goes back to the fundamental principle of self-control. So the generation that didn't have technology lost out on some of the accessibility to information and greatness that we have today, but they were much better off because they didn't have the test of technology. We have a tremendous test. The test boils down to one simple thing. Does it control us, or do we control it? Are we able to turn off our WhatsApp for a couple of hours? Are we able not to check emails for a couple of hours so we can spend time with the family? Are we able to make sure we don't access things which are not good and inappropriate? All that kind of thing. It starts from a very young age. We need to know how we treat it with our children. We need to not fall into the trap of screen time babysitting and all that stuff. And that's a very, very long discussion, but it's a very important discussion because it's out of control. So on a very large level, it's done a very great damage to our society because we live in a society that lacks self-control and self-discipline and is empty and meaningless often. But if we live a meaningful life, technology is one of the greatest things. It's beautiful. And it's used, it should be used to promote values, to promote positivity, to promote Torah learning, to promote Judaism, to promote all good things. But we need to revisit a core principle. Are we in control of what we have, or is what we have in control of us? And that's what it boils down to. And that's the answer. If we're in control, it's going to be a good thing. If we're not in control, it's going to be a bad thing, and everything in the middle.
All right. If anyone has any questions, again, please post them in the chat. For our final point here, it could be we've touched on this already a little bit, but I think it's just sort of, let's discuss a little more broadly. In olden times, standards was a big thing. Communities had standards. Society had standards. Certain things were shunned and looked down upon in many different areas. I'm not going to get into specifics, just in many, many different areas. There was sort of set societal standards to things. Nowadays, it's everything goes. It's you know, it's the way I feel. It's what I want. No one can tell me what to do. I have to be my authentic self. Whatever, all those sort of lines that go around today. You need to accept me the way I am. Is there any good to that? Is that totally a bad thing? Is that totally a good thing? What do you think?
Okay, so here's an example. This question is a bit different to all other questions. So I think this is an example where actually modern society has very little to contribute. In fact, I think it's only messed it up. So here we just have to go back to the core truth of the way we've always lived, and from a Jewish perspective, to the core truth of Torah. So we live in a very permissive society, and we live in a society today which has redefined the word morality in a very big way, right? I think without sounding simplistic, I think it's very true to say that the modern definition of morality is if I'm hurting someone else or not, right? So if I hurt someone else, society accepts that it's immoral because, you know, you're not allowed to hurt someone else. But if I'm not hurting anyone else, I can do whatever I want, right? So you said before that certain societies have had standards in previous times. That's the problem. Standards are not supposed to come from societies. Standards are supposed to be absolute truth. So from a Jewish perspective, we have a Torah. The Torah has values. The Torah has boundaries. The Torah has a definition and a set of values of what is intrinsically good and intrinsically bad, right? And it's not dependent if we hurt other people or we don't hurt other people. Meaning, of course, hurting others is immoral, unless the Torah says it's moral. There are times the Torah says, well, we hurt someone else and it's moral. There are certain wars in the Torah which are considered moral. There are certain punishments in the Torah which are considered moral. So it goes back. So as a general rule, of course, hurting other people is an immoral thing. But it's not the only immoral thing. There are certain behaviors which the Torah says is immoral, or not, or unholy, or not correct, or evil even, right? And that's got nothing to do with if I'm hurting someone else or not. Because we are created for a purpose. And purpose means, so the way the human being works is as follows. In a simple way, we are created for a purpose, but we are also simultaneously created with a temptation not to reach that purpose. Okay, and that's part of the design, which means we created with a godly soul and an animal soul. So we're created with the intrinsic tools to serve our purpose. We're also created with a temptation not to reach that purpose by design, because God wants us to work for that purpose. Part of the very purpose of creation is for us to own the purpose, and therefore to work for it, and to earn it, and to work hard to overcome obstacles, and so on and so forth. So therefore, we are tempted to do many things. You know, and you talked about the authentic self. I always tell people say, you know, what about trusting my inner voice or something, you know, trusting my inner instinct, whatever the case is. So I always think it's a very bad idea. With certain exceptions. Sometimes, you know, you have intuition, a parent, a mother's intuition, a father, but that's different. But generally speaking, it's a very bad idea. The reason it's a bad idea is because, I hate to break it to everyone, but you don't have one voice. You have layers of voices within you. You have voices coming from your soul. You have voices coming from your animal soul. Your voice is coming from your ego. Your voice is coming from this selfless, godly spark at the core of your soul, and so on and so forth. So I don't know which voice you're listening to. So rather ignore all the voices and actually tap into the voice which our outside absolute moral compass tells us is the voice that we need to listen to, which is the soul voice. And that soul voice is not always so loud, by the way. Sometimes we have to tap into and put on hearing aids to really hear the voice that's coming from the soul. So this particular question, nothing to do with balance or the pendulum syndrome, it's a great failing of modern society that we've moved away from believing in a absolute truthful being, a godly God, in other words, and the Torah, which gives us absolute moral values coming from the outside, giving us a moral compass. Because that's the only way to live a fulfilled life and a meaningful life. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't accept people who don't adhere to those values. That's something else, right? People say, you should accept me. Yeah, we should accept other people, not accept what they do necessarily. We should accept them because they're created by God, or accept them because they're intrinsic values. And because of that, we should actually inspire them to live by better values and to live by values which we know to be true, right? That doesn't mean we don't accept them. That's a separate discussion. We can still push people to grow and push people to reach a higher purpose and still accept them with unconditional love.
All right. I think we'll leave it at that for tonight. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. Please, God, we'll do another one of these next week. Looks like we're going to be in lockdown for a little longer, unfortunately. But there's many more shiurim, many more lectures, including tomorrow night on this Zoom at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night with my father. The subject will be Why Did He Laugh? The Jewish Approach to Pain and Challenge. It's going to be a fascinating lecture, so join us tomorrow night at 7:30, and as well as all the other learning opportunities that are happening. Have a wonderful night, everyone.
See you, Margaret. Good night.
Thank you. It was very interesting.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All the best.
Thank you. Excellent. You really lead by example.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All the best. Good to see
you. Take care. Enjoyed it. Thank you.